good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair in the Gene Boss studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, and it is a happy birthday to all of us. For today is the Coast Guard's birthday, founded in 1790 as the Revenue Cutter Service in the Department of Treasury. And I send my warmest greetings to all of us who have worn the shield. But I also am in particular adding my greetings to all of those, and there are literally thousands of them, people who did not themselves wear the uniform, take the oath, and wear the shield, but who are as much a part of the Coast Guard family as those of us who did. And they include our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, people who love the service and love the people in the service and support us in so many different ways. I'm reminded, of course, by on the Coast Guard channel, there are a number of people, but one of our administrators, John, J-O-N, and his family. John is also our historian. When I put up a signal in which I say something like, I don't know exactly the provenance of this particular subject, and John will send a signal out in which he clears it up. And we have thousands of people who are part of the Coast Guard world, but who themselves lie as in support and continue to do so this day. And I'm enormously grateful for all of them. But I am in particular also especially grateful for all of the people that I was privileged to command over 34 years of active duty, including 4 years at the academy when I was 17. So today, 4 August, is Coast Guard Day all over the service. And although most commands may well be celebrating holiday routine, what we call aboard ship holiday routine, that means that all the watches continue to be stood, but those who are not on watch don't have to chip and scrape and paint and clean. Well, they do have to clean. The ship always has to be kept clean and seamanlike. So at sea in particular, holiday routine is kind of a misnomer because the ship must continue to be served. The crew has to be fed. The captain has to be sitting up in the chair smelling the smell of fresh baking coming up from the galley. But ashore, in most Coast Guard commands that observe holiday routine, they also means that if you are a day worker, you get to do something else. Holiday routine is not much of a holiday often, and the lives still are to be saved. The work of the service goes on day and night, as it has for almost 2.5 centuries. I remember well my first Coast Guard day. I was 17. I was 1 month into my fourth class year at the Coast Guard Academy. We were about as fresh caught as you could possibly be. And the big event of the day was that we got to go off of the Academy reservation, loaded into school buses and taken to Ocean Beach. An afternoon of swimming, not even a can of PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon. In those days, cadets did not drink, and of course, I was only 17. That didn't mean that I didn't take an occasional sip of sherry at home, but that's another story for another time. In any case, it is the happiest of birthday days for the Coast Guard and for all of us who wore and continue today to wear the shield, and for all of those wonderful people who continue to be a part of our Coast Guard family. It is also Election Day. Here in the state of Washington, one votes almost exclusively by mail-in ballot, and I have every faith and confidence in the integrity of that system. If you have not yet cast your ballot, I urge you to do so. And if you have cast your ballot, lie back on the hawser, enjoy a chocolate chip cookie, because Counselor reminded me as I walked into the studio today that today is also Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. The binnacle list today last week. I had to report on the crossing of the bar of an old friend. And I now have the information about his funeral, which will be a little bit later in this month. And I have now gotten my ticket. I'm going to go to that funeral and be a part of that family as we grieve and mourn and at the same time celebrate. Another, though, friend of equal longevity in friendship is my friend Peg, who was one of my people in Sault Ste. Marie. And she's undergoing tomorrow some very serious surgery. And I have her, as well as everybody on the binnacle list, in the palm of my hand. All will be well. When I came into the studio yesterday, I did my broadcast, and I was doing the little wash-up that has to be done. And there was another parcel for me, and attached to the parcel was a note, and it said, "For Captain Joe, inspired by your last show, keep up the good fight, Amelia, Allison, and Mike." And the parcel was an absolutely beautiful and splendid book on the Arctic. I have only today taken the outside packing off of the book and went through it quickly. It is almost completely beautiful photographs that were taken by the author. It will be my book some week in the future, but my book today is one that is an old favorite of mine, and when I say old, I mean old. It is, the title is When Rome Burns, and the author was Alexander Wolcott. You have to go back to the beginning of the New Yorker magazine and Harold Ross. You have to go back to the time between the two world wars and the Algonquin Hotel in Manhattan, and the people that gathered there to talk about the things that happened as a result of the First World War. And they moved back and forth between Manhattan and, in particular, Paris. Alexander Wolcott was one of those people, and he was also a frequent writer for the New Yorker magazine, which was getting started at the time. But the chapter that I wanted to particularly talk about was one that had to do with Dorothy Parker. Dorothy Parker was, and I know that I am talking about things that happened probably long before almost everybody who is listening. In fact, the first publication of the book was in 1929. And it went all the way up. There were some later editions, and there's some material in it that goes all the way up just before World War II. One chapter has to do with Dorothy Parker. Dorothy was a poetess, and she was a member of the Round Table in the Algonquin Hotel in Manhattan. She wrote a lot of different things, but the one that always stuck with me is a quote that I'm going to give to you, because Dorothy was right about many things, but she was wrong on this one. And the quote was and is, "Men don't make passes at girls who wear glasses." Now, I don't know, Dorothy, who you hung out with besides people like Ford Madox Ford. Hemingway, when he was in New York, would go to the Algonquin. And I don't know who else you hung out with, but that is just not true. I have been surrounded my whole life by beautiful and strong women. I like the way that they manage their lives. And most of them have acquired a certain amount of intellectual maturity, and many of them wear glasses. And that being the case, I am certain that many of them were approached by gentlemen of equal intellectual capacity, who are not intimidated by women who are both strong and beautiful and are confident in both of those qualities. So I recommend the book because it has a lot of really interesting articles in it, in particular some of the red flags that Alexander Wolcott talks about, which we could see after World War II. Reading the book, you can see that he was noticing things that then indeed came to pass. And so I recommend it. I don't know where you're going to find it. I suspect that it's in reprint someplace. One can always start with Barnes & Noble online, or one can always go to the fountainhead of all things Amazon, where I am about to purchase some pieces, some parts to repair the air conditioning on my little brown truck. The magazine today is actually two magazines, but it is the same magazine. It is The Week. And the reason it's two magazines is that the real estate section for The Week this week, and I remind everybody that when I say The Week this week, doesn't necessarily mean really this week, because sometimes it takes a while to get to me. And so the most recent one I have right now is the middle of July. And so that's the one I'm going to talk about first, because it has, in the section that's called, that I like in particular, "It Wasn't All Bad." And here's a quote from it. "An author and treasure hunter has been appointed Britain's first mudlark in residence." Parenthetical insertion here. A mudlark is a person who, at low tide of the Thames River in London, goes out onto the tidal flats and picks up all sorts of treasures. It is a centuries-old activity, and mudlarks from the Victorian times, from Dickens times, back even in medieval times, they go back that far. And they were called mudlarks then, and they are called mudlarks today. And so here we go. Laura Malklem has spent 25 years mudlarking. Mudlark can also be a verb as well as a noun, along the banks of the Thames. And she has 360,000 followers on social media. Well, that's, I didn't need to know that about mudlarking, where she is known as the London Mudlark. Now she has been appointed by Southwark Cathedral. Southwark is the part of London that is on the south side of the Thames River in London. And there is a big cathedral there, Church of England now, where she has previously exhibited treasures uncovered at low tide. And so she is now giving a program to people of like interests. That's a great story. The real estate section comes from an earlier one, and it is fine Welsh country houses. Now, I don't intend to ever live in Wales. First of all, the language is very difficult, and the pronunciation of the words is even more difficult. But one of my second homes, of course, is in Cambridgeshire, East Anglia, the ancient kingdom of East Anglia. But I found a piece of property that fits for all of us. And it is in the part of Wales called Powys. And the name of the property is Pennybont Hall. And here's the description. Get ready to write your share of the check in pounds sterling. This grand Grade II manor house dates back to 1755 and is set in more than 21 acres. 8 beds, 2 baths. Now, that one right there, parenthetical insertion here. 2 baths means that one of them, only one of them probably really has any kind of shower or tub arrangement. The other one probably just has a toilet with a macerator. Kitchen, 3 receptions, those are living rooms to us. A 2-bedroom annex, a garden, outbuilding, and parking. And it's for sale for £950,000 sterling. And you all will recall that our limit is £1 million sterling, because that's what we think we could handle if we turned in all the things that we have to turn in. All right, we've got to move along here. I guess I spent a little bit too much time on something else, maybe on Coast Guard birthday. Well, one cannot spend too much time on that. So, first of all, in Navy Times, a monthly report is now required of all commanding officers in the Navy. And the name of this report is the Facial Hair Accommodation Accountability Report. It is due by the 15th of each month on an Excel spreadsheet. And it is to list by name, and I assume service number, but certainly by name and rating and or rank, the name of each sailor for whom an exemption has been granted to not shave. And these exemptions are being granted to those people that have a medical condition. And if they can't clear up that medical condition within a year, taking all of the extensions that they're allowed under the current instruction from the Secretary of Defense, and that's where it's coming from. Then they'll be considered for discharge. I don't understand why anybody can consider this to be a good way to take care of your people. We deal with and manage a number of medical conditions so long as they do not impair the accomplishment of the mission. When they start going after people because they have a medical condition, which means that they cannot shave all the way down to the bare skin, there are going to be some incredibly talented sailors in that group. I've not heard anything from the commandant yet about this. I hope that we will be able to continue to grant waivers to people. This one, I just don't get. And in particular, do I not get a monthly report? Now, I have been an XO one time, and I have been a captain six times afloat and once ashore, and I know what the administrative load on commanding officers is. There is somebody in the Pentagon in the Navy, works for CNO Admiral Caudle. There's some interesting stories about how he became CNO, by the way, if you want to do some digging on that particular story. Anyway, there's somebody that works for Admiral Caudle, and he is the facial hair accommodation accountability report officer. And he's got a checklist of every single command in the Navy that has a commanding officer or an officer in charge. And his fitness report depends on his skill at tracking down those wicked commanding officers who are tardy in submitting that report. Come on, CNO. This one's way beneath you. In the Middle East, in the sad, broken Middle East, a couple of things have happened in the last week. And one of them is that Saudi Arabia, and by the way, Saudi Arabia is now getting hit. Saudi Arabia is unveiling a plan for a multinational coalition of seagoing people to help to manage the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, all of those areas there. This is a variation on a suggestion that I have made and to which I would be happy to be a participant should anybody ask me if my sea bag was packed, which of course it is, that there be some international body which would, under agreement of all of the countries that border all of these waterways, to manage all of that. It would be something like the Antarctic Treaty. It was done then. It can be done now. So I will be watching this one, and I will be very much interested as to how it all goes together, and hopefully it will continue that it will not fall apart. We've had so many things started, promised, and then fell apart in the Middle East. And of course, this has been going on since the beginning of time. And if we can buy one generation, that's at least a start. But there's a lot that could be done, and I'm ready to apply the same principle to the South China Sea. The captains of all of those vessels that are milling about down there in the South China Sea, water cannoning each other. One of these days we're going to have a serious collision. One of these days we're going to have some young people die. It's going to happen because nobody is imposing any kind of discipline on it. You can have physical presence. You can use that to display your particular claim for a piece of territory. But you don't have to try to kill your brother sailors, because that's what we are. We are the Brotherhood of the Sea. All of us who have chosen to make that as our way to make a living, all of us who have chosen that as our life, have also chosen all of the risks and dangers that go with it on a daily basis, the change of weather that can happen so quickly. We don't need to also try to kill each other in an area where no war has been declared. Everybody that's down there is just doing a little bit of playground pushing and shoving. And someday, one day, and probably not too soon, it's going to turn deadly. The Rhine River is at its lowest level in history. If any of Captain Joe's people are contemplating taking a Rhine River cruise, I took one with Mary, a short one with Mary. It was just a wonderful experience. But I understand that some of the cruise companies, I don't know about Viking, which is the biggest one, but some of the cruise companies are postponing until the water levels come back up. The bad part about this from the point of view of lifelines is that the Rhine is indeed a lifeline for Central Europe. When you go to Europe and you go to the Rhine River, and you'd be amazed at not only how many Rhine River barges there are, self-propelled barges, families live on them, but not only how many there are, but how they are constantly in motion. And all of the flags that border on the Rhine are on that river. So if you're planning to take a Rhine River cruise, I suggest that you re-examine your ticket, because it may be put into a holding pattern. The clock on the computer screen is telling me that I have now gone over, and I had several other things that I wanted to cover, but we'll have to get to them next week. In the meantime, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. Those on the Binnacle list, on the Coast Guard channel, and other places that come to me know that you, all of you, are in the palm of my hand, and the concentrated energy of all of us is directed right at you, on course, steady as she goes. This is indeed your Captain Joe. As always, I am on station and watching properly.